This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Speakers, publishers, consultants, coaches, and info marketers unite. The Speaking of Wealth Show is your roadmap to success and significance. Learn the latest tools, technologies, and tactics to get more bookings, sell more products, and attract more clients. If you're looking to increase your direct response sales, create a big-time personal brand, and become the go-to guru, the Speaking of Wealth Show is for you. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Steve Siebold to the show. He is a speaking coach, provider of mental toughness strategies to improve presentations. He's author of How Rich People Think, and he's just got some fantastic ideas on both of these subjects and maybe a little bit on how they intertwine together. Steve, welcome. How are you?
Hey, good, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Good. Where are you located?
We're located in Atlanta.
Fantastic. Good city. I like Atlanta. We do a lot of investing there. So how do rich people think?
Well, they think differently than the middle class, that's for sure. I mean, rich people think in terms, they look at money in terms of abundance and opportunity and freedom and liberation and, you know, all the good positive things, whereas I think most of us have been sort of brainwashed to think about money in terms of scarcity and fear and that type of thing. So it's like they're living in a different world in my experience.
Right, right. Why is that, just out of curiosity?
Well, I think we're programmed, we're indoctrinated from childhood, mostly by, you know, by institutions, by people, by parents typically that don't have any money, and you know, they're trying to survive. And when you're teaching someone in survival mode, I think fear and scarcity tend to override everything you say, and so we're indoctrinated into it from, most of us are anyway, from birth.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's too bad that it's that way, because the world is such an abundant place and literally the possibilities are endless. We look at technology, we look at these incredible companies that have started out of thin air and become, you know, multi-billion dollar companies. So definitely the abundance mindset is the place to be, isn't it? Is the word getting out? Do you think people are coming around?
Probably not. I mean, I hate to say that. You know, you try to be positive,
wow,
right?
You're not exactly positive, yeah.
I don't think the masses really understand it. I mean, unless some kind of event that occurs that gets them to change it. I just got off the phone with a reporter at the Wall Street Journal who called me up for a comment. I don't know if you saw the story today, but there's a story out today in the journal saying that there are 290 newly minted billionaires, and Michael Jordan, the basketball player, being one, but a lot of mostly technology entrepreneurs being the rest. And he was asking me to comment for the story tomorrow about it. And, you know, here, like you just said, I totally agree with you that there's so much abundance out there, but I think that most people don't see it. I don't think they're catching on. I think they could. I don't think they are, because it's such a small percentage of people that really understand it that I don't think the masses are catching on. I wish they would, but we're doing our part, just like you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to talk about some of these other topics and even how they intertwine together, but I think the thing is that we've got to overcome, Steve, is that for all of our evolution up until just very recently, really, the world was a very scarce place, and people didn't have enough. So it's just kind of programmed within us to think out of that scarcity mindset, isn't it, where we're protecting what we have, and we want to make sure, you know, nobody takes advantage of us, and nobody takes our stuff, because stuff really was scarce. Only recently, and I'm talking maybe three decades, something like that, the world is now awash in stuff, isn't it?
Sure, sure. Well, I think there have always been the haves and the have-nots, but to your point, I mean, it's certainly, and especially in the last couple hundred years, it's really taken a big turn where there's so much opportunity for so many of us that, you know, aren't born into great wealth, or these families that have, you know, eighth generation, wealth and that type of thing. We're now at this point, especially now with technology, all of us, the playing field is leveled out, and all of us have a chance if we're creative enough and ambitious enough and innovative enough to really to to chart our own course and to really make more money than we need. It's just the greatest time in the world to be alive, especially to make money.
Yes, it really is. And I love how in the book you have a very long table of contents where you just reframe every one of these scarcity beliefs, don't you?
Yeah, well, I've interviewed millionaires and billionaires for 30 years. It's one of the longest running, largest studies. I've interviewed over 1,200 of the wealthiest people in the world. And I started out, it wasn't supposed to be a study. I just started out because I was a broke college student who wanted to be rich and thought, you know, you better talk to rich people if you want to do that. So I started talking to them and I haven't stopped since. And, you know, and so that's where I really wrote the book from. And that's where I get the information from is all these interviews. And it's just amazing how, and I grew up the same way with, you know, the indoctrination of the fear and scarcity of money and there's never enough and all that. And then you talk to these rich people all over the world, and it's like they're living on a different planet, and they're reaping all the rewards of that mindset. And yet we all can adopt it. It's not rocket science, but it's that, I think it's just that brainwashing from school, from, you know, the religious circles, you know, from sports coaches, from parents, from, you know, relatives, friends, and everyone that has no money. They're always preaching how there's never enough. There's always a lack. And I think that's what holds us back.
Well, one of the things that can really help us accelerate our success and help us become rich is public speaking. That is just such an important thing. Ever since Dale Carnegie wrote and talked about it so many years ago, his course became so popular, of course. I mean, influencing large numbers of people from the platform, it's a very, very important thing. How can people be better at this? How can they mentally prepare themselves before giving presentations and speeches? Let's dive into the public speaking side.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's just no question about it. And again, I think it's the 1% of the population, maybe a little bit more than that, that recognizes the power of the platform. You know, a lot of people call it the magic of the platform, whatever you want to label it. But it just can't be overstated what it does for you in terms of credibility, in terms of reputation, getting your name out there, your information, your ideas. But I think most people are held back because, one, they're afraid of embarrassing themselves, and probably the other part is they don't really feel like they have a lot to say or they have earned the right to be on a stage or have a microphone in their hand or whatever. And the truth is they probably have earned the right, you know, and they just don't believe it. So again, you've got this tiny percentage of people taking all, I mean, Bill Clinton has made over $100 million in speaking fees since he left the White House.
Wow.
$100 million talking, you know, that's a pretty good deal there.
That is a pretty good gig. Yeah. Yeah, definitely is. Well, okay. So dive into some of the, you know, the real tactical and maybe technical side of it. I mean, what does it take to become great at this?
At public speaking, I think probably the number one thing is confidence. I think you've got to have the confidence to get up there and share a message, share stories, be entertaining, give people ideas for, you know, to help them grow and that type of thing. And I think you've got to have the confidence that we had a bad experience with public speaking and it scared us. I know I did. I think everyone I know has had that experience where we say, okay, I was embarrassed. Don't do that again. Don't get up in front of people and talk because you'll do something or say something stupid. And the truth is, if you speak enough, I mean, I speak for a living and I say stupid things all the time. It happens. It's just you're up there and you're in the moment. And sometimes you say things you think, well, I wish I really wouldn't have said that.
Wait, but, like, where did that come from?
I mean, it's just part of being out there. You're going to make mistakes if you're in the game. And yeah, it's embarrassing and it just happens. And I mean, I've done it in front of 20,000 people, like a lot of people have. It, you know, where you just make mistakes and whatnot. But I think that once you get over that fear and you say, you know what, that just comes with the territory. I'm out in the game. You know, if I hide in my house or in my office, well, there's no chance I'm going to be embarrassed about it probably, but then I don't get the benefits of the medium as well. So I think overcoming the addiction to the emotional addiction to the approval of other people all the time, I think that's part of it, and confidence I think plays a role as well.
That's a mental toughness gambit, isn't it?
Oh, no question. It really is. I mean, I think you get tough enough to say, you know what? I mean, I'm about to do a 5-day seminar here in Atlanta, and I got people coming from all over the world, and, you know, hopefully I've done a lot of them for a lot of years, and, you know, I've gotten pretty good at it over the years, but, you know, I'm sure there'll be parts that all be filmed, you know, for 5 days. I'm sure there'll be parts I'll look at the film next week and I won't like it, you know, and that's just part of it. But you get tough enough to say, hey, you know what? I did my best. And next time I'll fix it, I'll be a little bit better. Some things I like better than others. And I think you toughen up enough to say, I'm nobody's perfect. But if you know the alternative is to not do it, which doesn't help at all.
So that's a sure way to know success is not doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Like investing, right? You know that world.
Yeah, no question about it. You've got to just dive in and you've got to take chances. And if they don't work out, you're going to learn something, and you got to just look at it as a learning opportunity. Well, talk to us about confidence. I mean, how is confidence developed? How is mental toughness developed? What are the ingredients? What's the recipe?
Well, I think you decide, you know, I think you decide what you're going to do. You're going to take the shot, probably no different than investing. I'm an investor as well in equities, real estate, all kinds of things like a lot of people. And you take your chances, you take your calculated risk and you say, you know what, I can live with the downside. If I lose it all, it's a spec stock or it's a spec piece of property, whatever. If I lose it, I lose it. I make the decision to say, if I lose it, I lose it. If I make a lot of money on it, I make a lot of money. If I break even, I break even. But I think decision is a big part of it. You make a decision that this is what the risk is, this is what you're willing to lose, this is what you're willing to do, and you decide that you can live with that. You can live with the worst case scenario. And if you do that, if the worst case scenario manifests itself, then you say, well, I wish that wouldn't happen, but that's the way it is, and you move on to the next decision. I think decision is the root of it.
So decision is the root. You know, in your speaking training, I mean, how do you train speakers?
Well, we have a program called the Bill Gove Speech Workshop. For people that don't know, Bill Gove was named they called him the father of the professional keynote speaking industry. He was the first president of the National Speakers Association, trained people like Zig Ziglar and Mark Victor Hansen and Bob Proctor and all these two speakers some of your people might know. He trained just about everybody that was really a top speaker for many years and for 50 years. And Bill was my partner, business partner, the last 5 years of his life. And so what we do is we take small groups of people, and you know, 10, 15, 20 people max, and we put them in a room for 3 days, and we teach them basically how to entertain a live audience for fees. And it's no small task, but we have 79 people over the years of the workshop that have become multimillionaires as graduates of the workshop. And that's over a long period of time, but pretty amazing process.
Yeah. So what advice can you give our listeners on entertaining audiences?
Well, I think you have to know right off the bat that speaking, the medium of speaking, if you're going to get paid, I mean, that's the space we live in, is the paid speaking world, not where you're selling in the back of the room, but where you're getting paid a fee to be there to give the speech. Yeah, I think the first thing you have to really get over that most people don't is that 80% of it has got to be entertainment. If you're up there teaching people like you would in a high school class or even at Harvard or Yale or, you know, some Ivy League school, you're not going to make it. You're not going to get $10,000-$20,000 a speech. You might get, you know, you can get an $80,000 a year teaching at Harvard, which is amazing, but you're not going to get $20,000 a speech to speak to corporate America or any other major organization. You've got to entertain the audience, and that's really the key. And there's lots of ways to do that. The way we start is with personal stories that tend to be entertaining and hopefully exciting.
Is it really that issue of the signature story? Is that what you're talking about when you say personal stories?
No, not at all. I mean, some people talk about having a signature story. I've never seen any multimillionaire professional speaker that really focused on one story. I mean, you tend to get known for certain stories, but, you know, the stories are just the means to the end. I mean, I think they're the means that keeps the audience alive for the end, which is the content that you're supposed to deliver, which is the solution. The problem is most of the audience doesn't care about the solution in a corporate speech. You know, the first two rows, the president, the executive team, they care about the solution. The other people are employees who are punching a clock effectively. And they want to go home, you know, or they want to go to the casino if you're in Vegas, work in Vegas, or, you know, some other garden spot where we give these speeches at resorts. They don't really care about the solution. They care about getting a paycheck and going home. Meanwhile, the first two rows really do care a lot, and they're the ones that write the checks for us. So we've got to do two speeches at one time. One, to entertain the mass of the audience who wants to be entertained, because they're more interested in that than they are education. They're more interested in entertainment. And two, we've got to give the solutions, hopefully our ideas, to help solve problems for the first two rows that actually care about solving those problems. So it's two speeches in one. A little bit of a trick, but it's, if you know how to structure it, it works real well.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so I'm fascinated by that. I agree with you. It is two speeches in one. Just any other advice that you want to share on crafting that two-speech thing? I mean, when you talk about personal stories, I mean, should the speaker be self-effacing? Is humor something you're just born with, or can it be developed? Any tips on that? Just anything you want to share on any of this stuff.
Yeah, anything with entertainment. I mean, sure, self-effacing humor is great. You know, any kind, anytime you can make fun of yourself, it's great. Because we get these, as you know, Jason, we get these glowing introductions like we've never made a mistake in our lives. We've never lost money on an investment. You know, we have perfect kids, perfect wives and husbands and all the rest of it. You know?
Everything's perfect.
Everything's yeah. just, we're just so amazingly perfect. It's just, I laugh at it. I've been hearing my introductions for 19 years and it makes me laugh almost every time because I'm thinking, you know, and I, of course I've written the introduction, so I know what it is, but yeah, it's just kind of skewed. And I think that because they see us up there, and most people are afraid of public speaking, that self-effacing humor, as you say, really is powerful because they hear it, they see us and hear us, and they think, wow, they're larger than life. And of course, the truth is we're not larger than life. We're just like everyone else. But it makes it seem like because of the power of the platform, it magnifies, you know, your credibility, which is good. But then a lot of times they're impressed with us, but they don't connect with us because they think, well, that's great. You're a superhero that flies around like Superman, and I'm terrified to give a speech. I can't even give a toast at a wedding, you know, and so I can't do what you can do. And of course, that's not what we want them to feel like. We want them to feel like they can do anything they want to do. So any kind of self-deprecating story, anything like that, self-effacing humor is great because it makes you human, as we are, but it makes them believe we're just like them. You know, we do dumb things and we lose money on investments and we get divorced, we drink too much, we smoke too much, you know, whatever. And it really does help. So anyway, I think the biggest thing, Jason, honestly, is the biggest problem that I've seen with people over the last 19 years of doing the Bill Gove workshop is the number one trap is they think they're teachers. They come in and say, well, I'm a teacher, I'm a professor, or I want to teach, or I'm a trainer and I want to teach. And in the keynote medium, in training it's different, but in the keynote, it's a 40-minute speech. It's a 45-minute speech, maybe an hour. You really do have to entertain them. You really have to tell them, have fun with them, tell them some stories, have a good time, use one-liners, use every trick in the book you can not to entertain them. Otherwise, you're going down. You know, you're just dying. You're not coming back. So we really work hard in the entertainment piece. Even though a lot of people don't, they fight it, and usually those people don't make it. That fight the entertainment side of it.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, they want to be maybe considered more intellectual or maybe a high content speaker. And the entertainment is, it's kind of that old saying, sell the sizzle, not the steak, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Sarah Palin gets 75 grand a speech. How much content do you think she has? You know, not to get too political, but come on, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's not. Well, I mean, you know, same with Bill Clinton, though, on any side of the aisle, right? I mean, aren't...
Well, there are, yeah. I mean, I think that you're right, though. I mean, it really is about...
I mean, Colin Powell used to get paid a fortune to speak. I don't know if he still gets 75 grand a speech in a private jet, but he used to, and that was before Sarah Palin had her career really launched. Was there... I mean, he's sort of like an intellectual guy. I can't imagine Colin Powell. I've never seen him speak, but I can't imagine him being very entertaining, but maybe he is. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, as much as I would not put Bill Clinton, Colin Powell, and Sarah Palin in the same, same category, to your point... You know, just in general, that's kind of the thing is that being serious about it, those three people are celebrities, so they get paid to really show up and all that, no matter what they say or do. But, you know, for the rest of us mortals that no one knows except our fan base, we get paid. We really get paid. They don't think we do, but we get paid to entertain and hold the audience's attention. And boom, once we've got their attention, here's a solution or a partial solution or an idea to a problem, you know, to a solution that might help you solve a problem. And they go, hopefully they go, wow, we never would have thought of that. That's really good. What else you have? And then we're in.
Good stuff. I guess we'd be remiss, and since we went down the political road, if we didn't talk about Obama a little bit, because, you know, candidate Obama was praised as this great speaker, this very, very moving speaker. He laid out his budget plan for the next 10 years to erase the national debt and fight income inequality. You know, how do you grade Obama through his presidency as a speaker? Has he... too stilted and not entertaining enough, or what do you think?
I think he's, I'm not a big fan politically, of course, that's really irrelevant, but I say that just to say that I think he is a tremendous speaker. I think that Bill Clinton's a tremendous speaker. I mean, you can go both sides of the aisle, but, you know, or those are the same side there, but certainly the Republicans that are great speakers as well.
You'd probably say Reagan was a great speaker, right?
I think Reagan was a good, in the sense that he connected emotionally with an audience. He tended to do that really well, at least in my opinion. He really seemed to connect with people. And I think Clinton does that really well. I mean, look at Clinton. If Clinton could run for president, you know, he would probably be president. And we all know he lied to all of us. I mean, but he's just such a, you know, he's such a charismatic individual. I mean, he's an incredibly rare talent. And I think Obama is too. I think he's president because he could give a great speech. You know, I mean, that's just a, that might be a little too political, but I think that without his...
Well, I mean, listen, don't worry about offending me. I think the guy's an empty suit, so...
But, yeah, well, but he's a great... Yeah, I do too, honestly. I think he's a very smart guy, but I don't think he's done a lot, but he is a great speaker, and I think that with if you removed his speaking skill, I don't think he'd have been in the White House. I don't think he'd have made it in if he was a speaker like John McCain, who's not all that exciting, probably.
Oh, God, McCain's terrible.
Yeah,
but Obama, you know, you get him off a teleprompter, and I don't think he's a good speaker at all.
No.
I mean, he's really good in the big stadium with the teleprompters, you know, and maybe that's more the credit of the speech writers. I guess you get lucky and you get a good speech writer and you're just in, right?
Well, I think that Obama, if he wasn't, you know, a celebrity at this point, obviously, and all that, I think that he, if he wanted to be a speaker, he could be a paid speaker. I think he's a pretty charismatic guy. I mean, I think that if you take someone that's really smart, and again, I disagree with almost everything President Obama, I've criticized him on national television many times. Especially on Fox Business Network. But I think he's a very, very bright guy. And I think that that's something that comes through that you can't hide in a speech. If you've got it doesn't have to be in general, like someone like a Obama or a Clinton, where they just sort of seem to have information about a lot of things. But if you know what you're talking about, whether it's real estate investing or, you know, whatever, stock market, mental toughness, you know, whatever, it comes through. It comes through if you really are steeped. And I think that's one of the things, you're really steeped in the topic. If you want to be a speaker, use public speaking and whatever for fees or to promote your business or whatever. I think you have to really be steeped in the topic because it will come through if you're not. I think we've seen that with Obama at some level, that some of the stuff that he was a great speaker on, he really didn't have a lot of in-depth knowledge about. And I think that shows through, but it sure sounded like it in the speech. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Give out your website, Steve, and tell people where they can find out more. I know you've got to run.
Yeah, the speech workshop, to attend the Bill Gove workshop, to get information about that, they can go to speechworkshop.com. But I've got a free course that I don't know if your listeners might be interested in this or not, but we have it's a free 7-day course. Tens of thousands of people have taken it. It's on the internet. It's a free video course called freespeakingcourse.com. And it's really good. It's a 7-day video. It's all very well done. We shot it in our studio here in Atlanta. We have a world-class facility here in Atlanta, studio and all that. It's a 7-day course. People can take it. I'll give them sort of a test drive of the professional speaking business. No hype. No, there's no sales or anything like that. We don't try to sell them anything. It's just a kind of a service that, you know, being so many people, thousands of people every year call our office to see if they can get in the fee-paid speaking business. And so we created this video program to say, okay, just go here first and call us back if you're interested after that. That's probably the best way to do it.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Well, just any closing thought on mental toughness, on speaking tips before you go?
You know, I think that they do. We were talking about this earlier, you know, I know before we went on, that there is really, you know, we do mental toughness training for corporations. The mental toughness side of speaking, as you said, you know, a few minutes ago, really is a piece of the puzzle. I mean, there's no question. I think that you've got to get, when you get up there, you know, you're going to have people that disagree with you. I mean, we all get everyone that goes out in front of cameras or crowds or both, like I do for a living, have for a long time, other people do. You're going to get criticized. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to get criticized. And I think if you've got the mental toughness to live with the downside of it, well, the upside is so large. I don't think people realize how much money is involved, and not just in speaking fees, but just in the ancillary business and the credibility that comes with being someone that's up in a crowd. And you don't have to be a Bill Clinton or a Ronald Reagan to be a great, you know, that great of a speaker. I think you should be competent. And that's what we teach people to do, just to be competent. And boy, it's amazing what you can get on the back end of that for your reputation, for your business, for your income. It's amazing. It really is.
Good stuff. Steve Siebold, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.